Now on The Pulse, useful and healthy information for you and your family. It's Northeast Delta Dental Radio with Tom Raffio and the Northeast Delta Dental Team.
Welcome to Northeast Delta Dental Radio. I'm Tom Raffio for Northeast Delta Dental Radio, and I'm also the head coach and the CEO of the dental insurance company known as Northeast Delta Dental. Well, it's hard to believe it's the end of July, July 29th and 30th, depending on when you're listening to this. If you are listening to this on the 29th, this is the last of the Capital Area Race Series, the eighth race in the series. It's at Canterbury, and we will announce the top 10 winners in each of the age groups. We'll do that by email, but the top 10 age for the overall series will be announced at the Canterbury Shaker Village, at the Canterbury Fair. So it's been a great series, a number of competitive age groups. We also have the Clydesdale category, that is men over 190, and the so-called Philly category, women who are over 140 and put them down and such. So it's been great. I want to put a big shout out to all my running friends for participating. And we will do what we normally do, which is a survey after the race to get your feedback. Last week's show, we had Brian Johnson from Johnson Golden Harvest, and we talked about, nutritional eating. He runs the farm stand over there in Hooksett, eating natural and so forth. And over the years, we've had many guests on here dealing with wellness. We've also had the Wellness Coalition on as well. And we also, of course, have had Tom Walton on, many times. So towards that end, with me this weekend is Dane LaRoche, who is an associate professor at the University of New Hampshire. And Dane, thank you for joining me this weekend. I know you have a busy schedule, so thanks for taking your time to be with me.
It's my pleasure.
So you're an associate professor in the Department of Kinesiology. So tell us about that and how you have wound your way up the ladder, so to speak, and then we'll get right into our topic today.
Sure. I'm an exercise physiologist by trade, so I study how the body adapts to exercise both acutely during the exercise itself and chronically, the long-term adaptations that occur after months and years of exercise. I originally was a biology major at the University of New Hampshire, but I was also a cross-country ski racer, and I was really interested in human performance and kind of applying some of those biological constructs to performance. Just like a mechanic might work with a race car to make it go as fast as possible, I was really interested in learning about how the body could be optimized for performance. So after I finished University of New Hampshire, I went to the University of Massachusetts and studied exercise physiology there. And after that, I went to the University of Utah to work on a PhD. And that was no mistake that I chose to go out there because the 2002 Winter Olympics were out there. And being a cross-country ski racer and working with Winter Olympic athletes, that was the place to be during that time.
Awesome. So here's an interesting question. So you went to UMass for your master's and UNH for undergraduate. And at some point, they used to play each other in football. So who did you root for in those days?
I was on the ski team at UNH when I was here, and I wore my UNH ski team jacket to all the UMass events.
Too funny. So tell us about your ski team experience.
Well, I was a cross-country ski racer, as I said, and it's a demanding event. Races are as short as a few kilometers, up to 50 kilometers or more. And so you have to have aerobic fitness that kind of gets you from the beginning of the race to the end of the race. But there's also a lot of strength and speed and power that's required. It's not like running where the intensity is continuous over time. It varies a lot. We have a long climb. You might be at your maximal heart rate going over the top of the hill. And then you might have a 30-second descent where you're kind of catching your breath. And in that sense, it's a little bit more like cycling, where you're kind of going up and down and up and down and so on.
Awesome. Last weekend, we had a biathlon. We named it the World Biathlon Championship. Tom Walton named it that way because I guess you could, but it was a trail race, and then you jumped into the kayak. So Chris Freeman showed up.
Oh, okay.
So I can tell you that he lapped me. He didn't lap me running, thank God, but but he did lap me on the kayak, so you can say that it's a little different than running. But anytime he or his brother Justin show up for any local running race, they always kick butt, so to speak, and always win. So It's an amazing, and also they obviously do quite well at. Every once in a while they do the Northeast Delta Dental Mount Washington Road Race, which, as you know, is running straight up the auto road, and they do quite well there. So you're a member of the New Hampshire Governor's Council on Physical Activity and Health. So what is the council?
Well, the Governor's Council on Physical Activity and Health was established by Judd Gregg in 1991, and the purpose of the council is really to promote a healthy lifestyle for New Hampshire residents, primarily through an emphasis on physical activity and fitness. And so there's a couple of initiatives that the council runs each year. One is the Outstanding Achievement Awards, which is to recognize people in the state who are doing outstanding things to promote health and fitness for our residents. We also have a Granite Walk of Ages each May, and the purpose of that is to get a large portion of the state out and walking. And this includes local schools and organizations like YMCA and so on and so forth. And this is also the kickoff to what's called the 90-Day Challenge. And the 90-Day Challenge is to exercise for 20 minutes every day in the months of June, July, and August.
Awesome. So when the Governor's Council gives out awards, how is that based? I know in the past, I know Tom Walton got it one year. I know my friends at the Winter Wild Series, Brandon, recently got it. So how does that process work?
So an individual or an organization is nominated for an award, and if people go to the NewHampshireMoves.org website, there's a place there where you can find a link to the Outstanding Achievement Awards. So each spring we take nominations, and then there's a committee on the Governor's Council on Physical Activity and Health that reviews the nominations and then makes a decision about who receives the award each year.
Got it. And the Outstanding Achievement Award, if you go to that website, NewHampshireMoves.org, would you find information on that?
Yes, you would.
And tell us about that. So is that for companies and organizations and schools?
Yeah, so state organizations, hospitals, elementary schools, individuals in the community who might be running fitness programs or work with youth sports. It's really to recognize anyone or any organization that is trying to promote a healthy lifestyle through physical activity.
So let's circle back now to the 90-day challenge, which is to exercise 20 minutes a day, you know, during the summer. So as we all know, poor diet, inactivity has been one of the leading causes of death in the United States. So has that gotten worse over the years or better? It seems like my experience is it's almost like a dichotomy. There are definitely a lot of the runners I hang out, everybody is so cognizant of this, but then of course we read the statistics nationally about obesity and diabetes and so forth. So what are the actual statistics in New Hampshire?
So as far as the amount of people that reach the amount of physical activity that they need, we're looking at about 23% of New Hampshire residents that get both the aerobic and strength activities that they need. New England does a little bit better than the rest of the country. For example, Texas and Tennessee, Louisiana, Mississippi, some of those states are below 15% of the population reaching the correct amount of activity. Now, if you break down activity into aerobic and strengthening activities, New Hampshire residents, about 53% of them get enough aerobic activity, but only 30% do enough strengthening activities to maintain a healthy body. And so when you combine those two statistics together, that's where we fall to the 23% of people reaching the exercise guidelines.
So just to kind of level set the audience, why don't you describe some aerobic exercise and why don't you describe some strength exercises?
Sure, I'd be happy to. So aerobic activity is any sort of cyclical activity that gets your heart rate up above about 65% of your age-predicted maximum heart rate and keeps that that heart rate up there for a period of 10 minutes or more. Now, as I mentioned, the guidelines for aerobic activity are to achieve about 20 minutes per day. That's where our 90-day challenge came from, but to achieve 150 minutes per week. And that's the level of aerobic activity that has been shown to have a protective effect against heart disease, type 2 diabetes, some forms of cancer like colon and breast cancer. So if people can reach that activity guideline, they're going to experience significant health effects because of that.
And strength exercise?
So for strengthening activity, it's recommended that all Americans achieve 2 to 3 days per week of strengthening exercises that use large muscle groups of the body. And you should do about 8 to 10 different exercises. And you need to do about 8 to 12 repetitions of each exercise. And one thing that people make a mistake with is that they don't fatigue by the end of the sets. So they might pick up a 3-pound dumbbell, which doesn't really weigh very much. They do 12 repetitions and they feel like they're doing something to strengthen their muscles. But what they really need to do is to find a weight that's heavy enough that they can't do more than 12, that they fatigue by the 11th or 12th repetition. And if you can do more than 12, then you have to up the weight to make sure that you're providing an adequate stimulus.
Great. Good. So I run, I spin, I have a great, I work out at Storms in Hopkinton, and there's an instructor I use, Kelly, that has me with the weights, and she definitely gets me fatigued. So this is good news. This
sounds
is really
like you're on the right track.
So let's get back to the 90-day challenge. Again, you can go on the website, newhampshiremoves.org, and you can, even though we're running into August and the period's over in August, that you can still obtain the New Hampshire State's Park Passport. So what is that?
So this 90-day challenge is in cooperation with New Hampshire State Parks, and there's a number of state parks, which includes Bear Brook State Park in Allentown, Miller State Park in Peterborough, Odeorn Point State Park in Rye, Rollins State Park in Warner, Rye Harbor State Park, and Winslow State Park in Wilmot, that normally require a fee. And if you participate in the 90-day challenge, you get a passport that will allow you to access those sites without paying the fee.
Awesome. Well, I'm telling you, I'm kind of connected to the wellness community and so forth, but I think we've got to get the word out, because I kind of, in preparation for this interview, just did my own sort of market test and said, you know, I asked people, have you heard of the NewHampshireMoves.org website? And not a lot of people nodded in the affirmative. So I'm hoping, to get the word out. So we'll return with the 90-Day Challenge with Associate Professor Dane LaRoche after a commercial break. Please stay tuned. Welcome back to Northeast Delta Dental Radio. Tom Raffio with Associate Professor Dane LaRoche from the University of New Hampshire. And again, just a reminder for my running friends, today, if you're listening to this on Saturday, July 29th, is the 8th and final race of the Capital Area Race Series, and we'll announce all the winning athletes. But everybody that participated really is a winner. The great thing about the Capital Area Race Series is the great combination. You know, there are several elite runners, such as Kristen Dineski, on the female category side, but there are also a lot of recreational runners, you know, like myself, that do it for the participation. And if you participated in 6 out of the 8 races, you'll be able to pick up your item, your participation prize at Runner's Alley, which is a great new partner for us this year. And again, big shout out to Tom Walton for organizing the biathlon last weekend. I'm on the Merrimack River and the trails on the NHTI campus. And we had Chris Freeman made it, and he won it, and it was a fun event. So back to Dane. So if someone right now, they're listening to this, and I know in the running circuit they have something called the Couch to 5K, various programs to just get people into it. Obviously, if you haven't been doing a lot of exercise, you're not going to go out and just on day one do a half marathon. So how do you get people involved? We have the 90-day challenge, but obviously you've made the point that low fitness and doing little or no exercises increases your risk factor for various diseases. So how do you get people started? I mean, is it educational? Because probably almost immediately they'll start seeing some of the health benefits, right?
Yeah, so I think that's our biggest problem. I don't think there's anyone out there that doesn't know that exercise is good for you. So the bigger question is, how do we get people out and moving? And 20 minutes a day for somebody who is not regularly active may seem like too much. And so if you could just begin to move in that direction, right? So if you could get off the couch and walk down to the end of the road, and maybe it only takes you 5 minutes, but that was the first step today. And then maybe tomorrow you do the same thing, and you kind of work your way up to maybe you're doing 10 minutes in the morning and 10 minutes in the afternoon. Well, now you've reached that 20-minute goal, because you can accumulate that 20 minutes in 10-minute chunks. So it's achievable for most people. And the thing is that, you know, we have to set our expectations in a realistic way. And if you haven't been doing anything, you just have to start small and kind of work your way up to that.
So can people, I mean, just getting on an old bike, even, you know, doing a hike, parking if you go into a mall, park at the furthest parking spot. I mean, things like that, right, to get started?
Yes, so for sure. The goal is to get your heart rate up. And as I said, it's getting up to that 65% of your age predicted max heart rate. And if you want a quick way to estimate that, you take 220 and subtract your age. So for a 20-year-old, the age predicted maximum heart rate would be 200 beats per minute. And 65% of that would be about 130 beats per minute. And so anybody can figure that out for themselves.
Can you give us that equation again? Because that's a question that I often get. So give us that equation.
Sure. So it's 220 minus your age in years. And that would be your age predicted maximum heart rate. And then you would take 65 or 70% of that, and that would give you a target heart rate to achieve to meet the aerobic activity guidelines.
Now, we know that some people exercise to really as a sort of weight control and so on and so forth. Can people obtain health benefits even if they're already at their a good weight, or even if they don't lose weight? Because I've been told that, you know, muscle weighs more than fat, so you may not actually see it on the scale. So tell us about that.
Sure. So if you've ever been to a fitness club in the first week of January.
Yes. You go to Planet Fitness, there's thousands of people.
And right. It's weans packed, its way right? Out, right? And then it just dwindles down as you get into February and March. So people have really good intentions. They get all excited about exercising. You know, they say, this is the year I'm going to do it. And I think a lot of times they have weight loss as a goal. And like you said, muscle is more dense than fat. So if you step on the scale every day and you weigh 180 pounds, you might exercise for 2 months and you might still weigh 180 pounds, but there might have been transformations in your body where you've gained some lean muscle tissue and you may have lost a little bit of fat. And the scale really isn't sensitive to that. But I would throw all of that out the window. Forget the scale, forget the body fat. It's really about being healthy. And I think people confuse fitness and fatness. So fitness is the ability to sustain exercise or perform a certain exercise workload or do a certain number of repetitions or something like that when you're lifting weights. Whereas fatness is really a measure of body composition. And it's actually better to be overweight and aerobically fit from a health standpoint than it is to have a normal weight and not have a high level of aerobic fitness.
Let's reemphasize that point. So being a little overweight and being aerobically fit is actually better than being thin but with no aerobic fitness.
Correct.
And that's proven out in science?
Yes.
Awesome. One of my, I've gotten to know over the years, there's a famous sports nutritionist named Nancy Clark. She's right here in Newton, Mass, and she's written a book that I look at often. And I know when I meet with her, she always makes that point over and over, which is, you know, that, you know, that type of, you know, healthy fitness is better than being, I don't know, thin through ways that aren't healthy. So that's a great point. So let's get back to increasing strength and weight work, because I think I know when I do weights now, I do lighter weights, but I do try to get to the max. And so you don't have to be a bodybuilder, right, to do weight. So I think you know, let's talk about that.
Sure. My research is actually in older adults, and I look at lower extremity strength and power and how that relates to mobility, physical function, fall risk, ability to perform activities of daily living, and it's a really good predictor. So those older adults who have the strongest, most powerful limbs are able to climb stairs the easiest, they're able to get out of their chair, they have faster gait speeds, and they report less disability than older adults who have poor strength. So I think sometimes people think that strength training is for young men who are trying to, you know, put on muscle and look good at the beach, but it's really about health. And there's a number of things that are related to it. For example, bone mineral density. So you have to actually load your bones up for them to respond and maintain a high density. Also, just maintaining a healthy body composition. So resistance exercise promotes muscle growth, and that muscle serves to absorb things like glucose. So individuals who have a high muscle mass are actually do a much better job at maintaining blood glucose levels. So if you had an older diabetic who is using insulin, for example, they might be able to reduce their insulin if they were able to participate in resistance training and increase some of their muscle mass.
That's awesome. Awesome news. And I think as we get older, you know, that mobility is really, you know, what you have. And I like the way you related, you know, length, strength, and body composition to, you know, to that and gait, because you do see, you know, a lot of older adults walking around like with a their back hunched and so on and so forth. And I know our trainer, Tom Walton, at Northeast Delta Dental, we have a lot of seasoned employees at Northeast Delta Dental. We also have a lot of young employees. So he's constantly making that point. So let's talk a little bit about UNH. This has been a fascinating Saturday and Sunday for me. So are you teaching undergraduates or graduates?
Both undergraduates and graduates in the exercise science program primarily.
And so do you see, I mean, what are you opening their eyes, to the science? You probably have a lot of athletes in there, but you probably have some non-athletes. Are you sort of opening their eyes to the connection, no different than, you know, I always end any one of my talks in the public with, you know, the mouth is part of the body and you can't have, you know, good overall health without good oral health. That are people also seeing the connection also to their mental health?
Yeah, as far as the students go, sometimes they call my class like a Mythbusters class because they come in with these preconceived ideas. For example, lactic acid is the source of soreness days after exercise, and we have a long discussion about why that isn't true. The way I teach my courses is I use empirical evidence, so I let the science do the talking. And so if somebody has a question, we'll apply the available research on that topic to answer that question. And a lot of times their opinions have changed because of that.
So what is your number one myth buster then? You think? Is it the lactic acid?
Well, that might be one of them. So lactate is actually the form that lactic acid takes in the muscle. It's actually in the salt form. And so it itself does not contribute to the acidic environment during exercise. In fact, the production of lactate helps resist some of the acidity, so it works like a buffer. And then after exercise, it's gone 30 to 45 minutes post-exercise. So the soreness that people get days after exercise is called delayed onset muscle soreness. And this is due to little micro tears in the proteins and the cell membrane in the muscle that causes an inflammatory response and makes the muscle swell up and get sore. Now that sounds bad, but in reality, that's actually the stimulus for adaptation. So when the muscle rebuilds itself, it makes itself stronger and more resilient to the next bout of exercise.
Well, this makes sense to me because every weekend I'm usually doing a road race on Saturday and Sunday, and then I do a Monday morning exercise class that I feel really good. But on Tuesday, I'm sore, so that explains everything. Now, you're well-published. Where did you have time? In my day, they would say to the professors, publish or perish. Hopefully that's not the case here, but you've written dozens and dozens of articles based on research. So how did you have the time to do all that?
Well, it's still publish or perish. It's important because you're creating new knowledge, and that's one of the things that universities do. So the University of New Hampshire runs primarily fall and spring semesters. We do have a summer term and a January term, but they're not quite as busy. So I try to do most of my research and writing over the summer when I have more flexible time.
Awesome. When you're not running or doing something. So let's we have about 45 seconds. Let's give the final push for New Hampshire Moves .org in the Governor's Council on Physical Health and Activity.
Yes. So please go to NewHampshireMoves.org and sign up for the 90-day challenge. There's only about a month left this summer, but if you sign up for this summer, you'll be on the mailing list for next year, and we'll be sure to make sure that you get an announcement about that.
And go on to that same website if you're interested in the Outstanding Achievement Award or winning or getting nominated for one of those Governor's Council Physical Activity Awards like folks like Tom Walton. Well, we are blessed in New Hampshire to have a young professor like you spreading the word. And thank you for joining me this weekend.
Yes, thank you, Tom. Appreciate it.
Hope to see you at Durham. I'll be there for some football games this fall. Tom Raffio will return next weekend with more of Northeast Delta Dental Radio.